Well, I wouldn't have had at the forefront the kind of things I'd have in mind for the director of an institution in which I work, or for a political leader or whatever, because there you'd be looking for administrative ability, ability to work with a team, you know, vision and all that. I would want those things in the leader of the Society of Jesus, but I would want something more as well. In the end, as you say, it is a religious order. It's founded on the gospel. The purpose is to make Christ known to the world, to serve that mission, his, not ours. And if the person elected wasn't somebody who could be transparent of religious values, who could not in some way be, you know, a reminder of Christ for people, if he had none of those kinds of qualities, and he could have super efficiency and all that, sure, where would that leave you? You'd say, put him in charge of Microsoft and let us get on with finding a religious leader. A religious leader is something distinctive. It's a person who can straddle a bit the world of the visible and the invisible, mediate to people things that are hidden very much amid the noise of today's world, like hope, possibility of life after life, significance of love and integrity. Those kinds of things, they need a special person, because the invisible isn't easy to make visible. You know, when I think of the Dalai Lama or of other religious leaders, you know, Bishop Tutu, or, you know, such people who have given significant spiritual leadership, what I admire most is the fact that they've cast light on something transcendent. They've opened for people a window on what is bigger than the tables and chairs and the lumps and the bumps of just this world. They open the big questions, the values to justice, goodness, truth, etc. You want somebody who's a credible example of that.
Did you find for yourself that the process worked and yielded what you would have wanted?
More than I imagined. I was rather nervous at first, because I said to you there were 225 people there and I knew about 50. Other groups might be smaller, so they might know almost everybody by reputation. Say if you have 60 or 70 or 80 and you're electing, say, somebody within a group that size, it's easier to get to know people at least by some kind of reputation. But there were people I didn't know at all, coming from parts of the world where I didn't speak the language. I don't speak Spanish. So I certainly had to work hard to find out about the South Americans from others who knew them, less so with other languages I can speak. But I was nervous at the beginning that even though we'd had we'd 10 days together anyway beforehand, and I had an impression of most people, I was nervous that I wouldn't know enough to vote as responsibly as I felt I was required to. But somehow, the process took care of that. I was quite confident when the time came. And you're asked also, there's a mass on the Saturday morning, and then the election takes place. And you're asked to come to the mass, not just with one name in your mind, still with at least two and possibly even three. You know, you've been talking to different people, you've been exposed to people, you have come up with your kind of, in religious orders we call it a terna, three names, you know. But you're asked to sleep on the Friday night or whatever night before the election and not come hard and fast down on one, but be open when you go to pray the next morning with all the people and you listen to the homily of the guy who has been chosen to do that. You're asked to keep an openness. Obviously, you've reduced it to one or two, you know, maybe at most three. That was difficult to do, but it was also quite important.
Because presumably, yes, it makes it easier when you have to give the casting vote at the very end.
Let's put it this way. Supposing, for example, for various reasons, you know, but including your own, you know, flawed thinking processes or whatever, you were very set on one name. But that maybe wasn't the name that, if we believe that God guides this process somehow, maybe wasn't the name that was first on his list. How would you be open to that? That's why there's the mass and the prayer and the exhortation and all that. And you're still open and something can shift there. Whereas if you're already, this is in a political party, you'll have nailed your colours to the mast and you've said, this is my woman, this is my man. But that's exactly what we didn't do. And I didn't do it. I remember right up to the end keeping that window of openness.
You mentioned there, this is my woman, this is my man. The Jesuits, an all-male congregation, we do know from studies that women and men communicate differently. Do you think the murmuratio would work equally well as a process for a group of women?
Well, I don't see why not. I think it should. Now, say a group of women in a religious order will have their own tradition. And I think our process comes from St. Ignatius, and it's very situated in the kind of group that we are. I mentioned earlier about a strong authority and so on. So it comes from him. You could say maybe we don't need just one-on-one conversations all the time, but he said that, so we do it. If you can see, even the way I talk, there's a great lack of suspicion in me with regard to the process and a trust in the process itself. And I wouldn't be like that about everything, even about everything Jesuit. But it doesn't come from such a high authority and from such a long tradition. But I think if a woman's religious order is engaged in a similar process, they will have it embedded in their traditions also. They will see things from the point of view. They may be Ignatian influenced, which would help then for it to be like this. But I don't see why it wouldn't work. Now, if the situation is that people know everybody, say there are 60 people and they know all 60 women who would be likely to be elected, then they have to be maybe a bit more ascetical with regard to people's personal peccadilloes or shortcomings or slight prejudices that they could have. Some people I didn't know very well, so I couldn't really be prejudiced. I was lucky enough to be able to focus on, look, we know he's not God, but what are the real strengths he would bring to this office? And what are the shortcomings for which at least he would need help? But you know, whether he leaves the cap off the toothpaste or snorts into his beard or wipes his nose with his sleeve or does any of these awful things that can send you running from the room, that didn't influence too much.
And you did mention at the start, which I was intrigued by, that it didn't have to be one of the 225 people there.
No.
So presumably in a smaller group, a name could come from outside of that group. Did any name come from outside of...
Well, it would depend on their rules. Their rules could be that it had to be a person who was at the process. But my understanding, it's like with the conclave. They nearly always elect the Pope from within, but they don't have to. And I think anybody in final vows, his name could come up. And could then, you know, go forward very much. I think he'd be at a bit of a disadvantage because he's not around to be questioned.
Yeah. You know, or people to talk or get a feeling.
So, but I do remember names being mentioned from outside the congregation. But towards the end, I don't remember. I was busy enough talking to the people who were there to worry about that at that point.
Now, you've talked about the process. I take it that what happens within those days is secret and private, and people are told.
You're clever enough to see that even though I've said a lot, I haven't said anything specifically about anyone. No. Or about myself in relation to anyone. It is a confidential process, yeah. And one that I found surprisingly respected.
Overall, a good experience for you and a good outcome.
A great experience. I mean, I wouldn't be pious. You know, I like when Cardinal Ratzinger was asked by somebody a long time ago, does the Holy Spirit elect the Pope? And he answered, no, the Holy Spirit doesn't elect the Pope, the cardinals do. And then he spoke in a more nuanced way about the possible role of the Holy Spirit. Earlier I spoke about, you know, what's in the heart of God in relation to these processes, but I did not, I wouldn't say that, you know, God gives people freedom and we work through the freedom of people to bring about situations then, and it's really our freedom. So I would say that the people at the congregation elected the general. But because of the kind of process that was, they had enough detachment from particular concerns, openness to the needs of the world, breath, that insofar as the Spirit was speaking, one picked up the waves. I looked back over notes that I had kept, you know, because as time goes on, I forget details. But I found that I had written, surprisingly, that from the beginning to the end of the process, I did feel that it was one that was done in consolation, which would mean the presence of the Spirit. There was no edginess or acerbity or cantankerousness or impatience, even though it was quite an exacting process.